Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. We're back. So good to be here. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I am sitting here dreading tomorrow morning, which is not usually the case, but tomorrow morning I have jury duty. I have to go to jury duty in Arapahoe County, where I reside, and I always hate going to jury duty. I guess that's not really an original thought in any way, but the reason I detest it so much is because I never get picked, because I think I just don't watch enough primetime television, and I'm not an avid video gamer. I'm not sure what it is, but they always seem to pass me over for jury duty. So I feel like I waste 4 hours of my day going down there. And I was interacting earlier in conversation with my extremely attractive audio engineer. She's from Japan originally, before I plucked her from there and convinced her to come here. And they don't have a jury system in Japan. She had never heard of jury duty until she moved to America. And she told me that in the early 90s, they were contemplating instituting a jury system in Japan, but then the O.J. Simpson trial happened. And, well, they thought better of that. Anyway, I'm just depressed to have to go down there and go through all the rigmarole, because, frankly, I don't believe in the jury system. Maybe that's how I'll get sifted out early. I'll say, I don't believe in the jury system. And to you, judge, and to everyone in the courtroom, I don't think you're qualified to be doing what you're doing. In fact, if anyone should judge this case, it should be me, and only me. And that's the only way I want to participate. Maybe that probably won't score me any brownie points with the judge. Maybe I'd be able to come home early, though. So I'll try that. Oh, and a little bit of housekeeping that I forgot about last week. I do want to acknowledge and thank world-famous blogger Jason Saltzman over at bigmedia.org for a nice little write-up he did on me and my experiences out there petitioning for personhood. Mr. Saltzman, thank you very much, and I will put up a link to the bigmedia.org, which is his blog. And he brings up today, as a matter of fact, I was looking at the top of the post here. Let me get back to it on my computer. How will Ryan and Romney reconcile their different approaches to enact personhood? Well, now, Mr. Saltzman, I haven't even read your blog, but it'd be a shock to me that Mitt Romney has any approach to enact personhood. Romney is also apparently a supporter of personhood. Now, where'd you get that idea, Jason? But he said he's against the personhood law. Instead, Romney favors personhood efforts at the state level. No, he doesn't, Mr. Saltzman. He doesn't support them at the state level. He hasn't supported us, and we're at the state level. And his minion, Joe Coors, hasn't supported us. In fact, Joe Coors walked past me at the Adams County State Fair like I wasn't even a person myself. He wouldn't even make eye contact with me. He's out glad-handing and slapping backs and kissing babies. But when it comes to standing up for the rights of the most innocent and the most vulnerable amongst us, Joe Coors has taken the Mitt Romney approach, at best to just ignore the whole situation. Well, we'll get to some of that. Mr. Saltzman, I apologize. I should have read your blog before I went on the air. I can assure you that I will read it as soon as the broadcast concludes. Mr. Saltzman does a fairly good job. I believe he's a liberal. I know that he calls himself pro-choice. Okay, I don't want to put a label on Mr. Saltzman. Let's just say he's more liberal than I am. Okay, which is like most people. But anyway, he does a nice job of being fair in his coverage of both sides. of the personhood issue. And I suppose that's the best we can hope for, since Mr. Saltzman is not yet an advocate for the personhood of every innocent human being who is created in the image and likeness of the living God, who is Jason Saltzman's creator, savior, and judge. So there. But I will link to the bigmedia.org blog, and thank you once again, Mr. Saltzman, for a fair and well-written article about me. I didn't make the cut and to get into the Ryan Romney article, but I suppose that wouldn't have been appropriate. All right, well, let's move on to the news of the day. Look for that bigmedia.org link. What's that now? No, my extremely attractive audio engineer is making snarky comments under her breath off to my side. I think she's saying, would you just get on with the show? Stop sucking up to this Saltzman guy, even though he is a world-famous... World famous blogger. Oh, yeah, like Michael Savage. The one way to make sure that Michael Savage falls in love with you is to write an article mentioning him in any way. In a good way, yeah. And so I guess I'm a victim of my own ego. But I do appreciate it. All right, now, let's move on to the news of the week, because I've got a lot of it. In fact, I've probably got more than I can cram into 1 hour, so you'll have to listen quickly. I'm going to start with a WorldNet Daily article about the atheists. Now, last week we talked about agnostics, and I've met a number of honest-minded agnostics. In fact, I met one today at lunch who said he has been thinking about God, but he's not yet sure. Interesting young fellow. I believe his name was Colin, visitor at our church there at Denver Bible Church, where if you want to come down and find out what it's all about, you got to come down to Denver Bible Church. We had a three-hour conversation after church over shawarma and gyros. How do you pronounce it? Gyros? Gyros? Anyway, a lot of lambs lost their lives for our lunch today. But we had a three-hour conversation about the universe and the, well, how should I put this? The fact of nothingness. Is there nothingness? Can a universe come from nothing? Anyway, we had a scintillating conversation for about 3 hours about physics, time, space, particles, quantum mechanics. And this visitor to our church, who's an intellectual agnostic, a smart kid, well, I can just imagine what him and his girlfriend must have been talking about on the drive home. I don't know if he's ever encountered a post-church lunch that focused on quantum mechanics before, but he did today. And he considers himself a utilitarian, by the way. Interesting. Haven't looked into that all that much, but I will, because he gave me some interesting things to think about. He posited the idea that love is utilitarian, and I'm just going to have to ponder that for a little while, Colin, if you're out there. Thank you for the food for thought. All right, now, but we're not talking about agnostics here. We're talking about atheists. These are people who say they've made up their mind that there is no God, and WorldNet Daily reports that a lawsuit that challenges the placement of a cross at the site of the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center alleges atheist plaintiffs have suffered serious physical and mental illness because the religious symbol has made them feel excluded. The organization is called American Atheists, and they contend that the placement of the 17-foot-tall symbol at the National September 11 Memorial and Museum is making some atheists unbearably sick. Physically ill, they're claiming. Yes, I kid you not. I kid you not. Now, I don't get physically ill when I see... Who's the guy from Penn & Teller who talks? Which one is it? Who's the Penn and... You don't know. Neither do I. Anyway, the Penn & Teller, the fat guy who talks. I don't get physically ill when I hear him lecture. Why should they get physically ill when they see a cross? What's that? Oh, she, my extremely attractive audio host says she does get mildly nauseous. Now, and I will admit that Bill Maher has induced vomiting and gagging on several occasions, but that's just due to his vulgarity. But I think we have some audio of someone from American Atheists reading the crux of their of their complaint. I want to make sure, who is this from? Who read this? Well, I can't really tell from the article. I probably didn't cut and paste properly, but we have tape. The plaintiffs and each of them are suffering and will continue to suffer damages, both physical and emotional, from the existence of the challenged cross. Named plaintiffs have suffered dyspepsia, symptoms of depression, headaches, anxiety, and mental pain and anguish from the knowledge that they are made to feel officially excluded from the ranks of citizens who are directly injured by the 9/11 attack. Okay. Thank you for that audio. My extremely attractive audio engineer, always ready. Not sure who that was. And I'm generally not sure if it was a homosexual man who read the crux of the lawsuit here for the folks at WorldNet Daily. But we're assuming that it was, because the birds of a feather tend to flock together. Anyway, that's what it is. The atheists are upset, as usual, for being excluded. They want to be excluded. They've excused themselves from the conversation about God and religion because they've said they don't believe. Well, just because you don't believe, you can't let us believe in peace, for crying out loud. Anyway, more atheist news. And again, this is from WorldNet Daily as well. This is from the Bad Religion file. The same organization, American Atheists, oddly enough, has announced a billboard campaign against what they call, quote, the foolishness of religion in the political landscape, unquote. I suppose I should have lisped that one, too. And not to imply that all atheists are homosexual or vice versa. It's just, it's a natural linkage I make in my mind. I'm not sure why. Anyway, they've got this billboard campaign going over there at American Atheists. One version of the campaign is scheduled to run in Charlotte, North Carolina, during the Democrat National Convention. The billboard, as seen on American Atheist's website, attacks Jesus as, quote, a useless savior, unquote, next to an image of a piece of toast with a purported image of Jesus burned on it. And this is what annoys me about superstitious Christians, is I think there are some Christians in New Jersey or something who actually claim to have seen Jesus on a burned piece of toast. And that's just embarrassing for everybody. And it hands ammunition to the people at the American Atheists, to make fun of us. But it's okay. We're tough. We can take it. If the American Atheists want to make fun of us, they're not making fun of us. They're making fun of Jesus Christ. And he proved long ago that he can take it. He can take more than any man has ever had dished out in all of history. He can take it. But be careful, American Atheists, because eventually he's going to dish it out. So be on the lookout for that. Let's see. Their billboard campaign also claims that Christians have a sadistic God and that Christianity has more than 30,000 versions of the truth. And when you look at the denominational divisions in Christianity over some of the silliest of not even theological or doctrinal issues, it can kind of seem that way from the outside. But just so you atheists know that there are a few fundamentals that we agree on. I mean, even with the Catholics. That Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He came to earth. He was killed by the Romans and the Jewish leadership. He was crucified. He died. He was buried, and on the third day he rose again. And he is the Savior and Judge of all the earth. So on that we agree. So it may appear that there's 30,000 versions to you outsiders, you atheists and agnostics and whatever. But that's not quite true. That's an exaggeration. Let's see. We have more from the atheists. Christians, their billboards say, are part of a hate-promoting group that calls hate love. Okay, well, I guess you're entitled to your opinion, even if you're wrong. The billboard company. Now they were trying to run this in Tampa, where the Republican convention will be. But no billboard company in Tampa is willing to run their billboards, apparently. So they've got to be pretty upset about that. They also have an anti-Mormon billboard. And now how they confuse Mormonism with Christianity shows their ignorance. The The Billboard campaign is targeting presumed Republican candidate. Presidential nominee. It's hard for me to say that. I feel like I have to spit after I say that. Republican presidential nominee, Willard Mitt Romney. And it begins with the heading, Mormonism, and then declares God is a space alien, which I think the Mormons actually believe, or words to that effect. The billboard features a man in glowing underwear, an apparent reference to the special undergarments worn by the Mormon faithful. This is according to WorldNet Daily. Just a preview, I believe, of what the left is going to pull out against Romney and his Mormonism. Because while the right was afraid to attack Reverend Wright and black liberation theology and Barack Obama as a radical, the left will have no problem attacking Mitt Romney for some of the outrageous and ridiculous beliefs of Mormonism. What else do we have? Last year, American atheists claimed this. The reality is that there is still a lot of bigotry out there, and many companies refuse to fly our banners. See, they were trying to get airplanes to fly their banners that say the banners declared God bless America instead of God bless America. That's pretty witty, huh? That's witty. I'll give them that. It's witty. Instead of God bless America. But 80% of the pilots refuse to fly their banners, so they say there's a lot of bigotry out there. Many companies refuse to fly our banners. This just emphasizes the importance of doing this campaign! Exclamation point, said American atheists. And it is instructive for me to know that the enemies of God never give up. They never give up, and they never will give up. And that's why one example is the personhood campaign here in Colorado. Mr. Saltzman pointed out in his blog that I operate under no delusion that we are going to win in a Democratic election in this election cycle here in Colorado this year. I don't think we're going to win, but not unlike the enemies of God. The people of God must also never give up. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. And like I say, we must never give up. And one of the reasons is the atheists. And one of the reasons is the agnostics. I mean, we hope to win them over. But if they don't want to be won over, then to defeat them and to embarrass them and to make people take them less seriously. Well, at least with the atheists. But there's a bigger fish to fry. And that's, the religion of peace, Islam. This is from WorldNet Daily again. What people are going to think, all I read is WorldNet Daily, and that's not the case, although I do read it a lot, and I do recommend it. Mr. Fair does a good job over there. They have an article, a report. Reports from several different media agencies state that the radical Muslims have begun crucifying opponents of newly installed President Mohamed Morsi. I said crucify. That's what I said. Middle East media confirmed that during a recent rampage, Muslim Brotherhood operatives crucified those opposing Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi, crucified them naked on trees in front of the presidential palace. Yes. Raymond Ibrahim, a fellow with the Middle East Forum and the Investigative Project on Terrorism, said the crucifixions are the product of who the Middle Eastern media call partisans. Arabic media call them supporters, followers, and partisans of the Muslim Brotherhood, Mr. Ibrahim says. Ibrahim also says the victims can be anyone, including Egyptian Christians. He said extra brutality is reserved for Christians, But the crucifixions are because of Islamic doctrine and are required by the Quran, the Holy Quran. Now, I'd never heard that about Islam. Now, you people know how I feel about Islam. I feel it is the genuine satanic religion functioning on the earth today. But I had never heard this. But we have confirming information. Senior fellow Claire Lopez at the Center for Security Policy, she quotes the Quran. She says, crucifixion is a had punishment. What is a had punishment? Had? Had. She says that means it's stipulated in the Quran, and she quotes Surah 533. She says it's an obligatory part of Sharia. Now, this is something I never knew. This is shocking information. Crucifixion has been a traditional punishment within Islam since the beginning of Islam, somewhere around 666 AD, somewhere around there. Maybe not exactly, but right in there. Lopez warns that the Coptic Christians must get out of Egypt as soon as possible. For the many millions who will not be able to get out, she says, I expect things will continue to deteriorate just as they did for Germany's and Europe's Jews from the 1930s onward. So here it is, Surah 533 from the allegedly Holy Quran. The Quran says this, indeed, the penalty for those who wage war against Allah and his messenger and strive upon the earth to cause corruption is none but that they be killed or crucified, or that their hands and feet be cut off from opposite sides, or that they be exiled from the land. Now, I'm reading that, and I'm saying, well, there looks to be some wiggle room on this whole crucifixion thing. It doesn't seem like it's mandatory. It says you can kill them or crucify them or cut off their hands and feet or exile them from the land. So why are these radical Muslims in Egypt going right to crucifixion? Well, it's because they're a bloodthirsty mob ousting a government and taking over. And I mean, you know what happened in the French Revolution. They didn't exile people from the land, or they chopped their heads off. Man has a tendency to descend to the most cruel and vicious forms of warfare and punishment during revolutions. And that's what's happening in the Arab Spring, as it's been called, as it's been mislabeled. And so now we've got crucifixions in Egypt, and apparently we have a religion that actually says crucifixion is a valid option, and that's the religion of peace, Islam. Okay. More from the war file. This is from the Associated Press. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has declared that confronting Israel is an effort to protect the dignity of all human beings. He said, quote, the existence of the Zionist regime is an insult to all humanity. He was addressing worshipers at Tehran University after nationwide pro-Palestinian, what did I say? Pro-Palestinian rallies, an annual event marking Quds Day. Quds is what they call Jerusalem. And every year they lament the fact that there is a single Jew alive in Jerusalem. And that, by the way, Quds Day is on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, the alleged holy month. Now, I put in alleged because the AP just says it's the holy month. They take it at face value from the Muslims that it is holy. Me, myself, I'm not so sure it's holy, as a matter of fact. So I put in that it's allegedly a holy month. Now, the interesting thing about this story, ladies and gentlemen, is not that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has once again spoken up in a vicious and disgusting way against the right of Israel to exist and Jews to live. That's not surprising, right? He does that all the time. What is surprising and a bit disturbing to me is the response from Washington, D.C. In Washington, National Security Council spokesman Tommy Vitter strongly condemned the Iranian leader's comments. Here's what he said. Quote, if Iranian officials are truly concerned about protecting the rights and dignity of all human beings, then Iran should stop supporting Assad's brutal assault on the Syrian people. Iran and Syria's blatant disregard for basic human rights is the real insult to humanity. Now, maybe I'm not reading this right, but I did not hear a strong condemnation of the Iranian leader's comments. Maybe this is just a portion of spokesman Vitter's comments. I don't know, but I didn't hear a condemnation there. At least it wasn't reported in this AP article. Now we've also got a spokesperson for Un-Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. So the Un-Secretary said in a statement that Ban Ki-moon also condemned the comments and said the leaders in the region should use their voices to, quote, lower rather than escalate tension, unquote. So what bothers me here, folks, is neither Washington nor the United Nations defended Israel's right to exist or even mentioned it in what the AP thinks is a strong condemnation of Mr. Ahmadinejad's state. So just a note to my Jewish friends. Keep your powder dry because it looks like you're on your own when it comes to Iran. I mean, that's just disturbing that... Let me see. I'm just reading through it. Neither one of them even mentioned Israel by name in their condemnation of Mr. Ahmadinejad. So there. So that's where we are. Okay. So our political leadership at the national and international level is extremely confused about who we are and who our friends are and how to operate. But it's no better here within our borders. I have the... I think this is the outrage of the week. I mean, this is the political outrage of the week, what I'm about to read. And I would have to say that it's less outrageous than all the robberies, murders, rapes, bludgeonings, and beatings that happened in the streets and suburbs and small towns of America this week. Let me just say that those are more outrageous, but I don't have time to report on all those here because they are epidemic. And it's impossible to report on them all. But this, I didn't know whether to put this in the justice file or the war file. And so I decided to put it in the war file. And this is just unbelievable. Military appeals court, according to CNN, halted the murder case against Major Nadal Hassan last week over a judge's threat to shave the beard of Mr. Hassan. So Hassan's court-martial had been scheduled to start last Monday, and you'll all remember he was accused. This is outrageous. CNN says he is accused of killing 13 people and wounding another 32. He's just accused of it? I think there's like 50 or 100 people who will swear on a Bible that they saw him do it, and in fact, the police shot him while he was doing it. So to say that he's accused of it, I think is to be a little too nebulous, perhaps too clever by half at CNN. But then again, that's what they teach you in journalism school, is that you cannot state anything unequivocally, and you certainly don't want to imply responsibility to anyone before the trial. And now, we don't even know when the trial is going to start. An order by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces now means that the trial date is unknown. We can't get the trial off the ground because this Muslim radical fanatic murderer wouldn't shave his beard, and the court doesn't know what to do about it. It's embarrassing and outrageous. The beard issue first surfaced back in June when Hassan, who remains in the army while awaiting trial, appeared at a June hearing with facial hair. A judge postponed that hearing, then found Hassan in contempt of court and fined him $1,000 and warned him that he would be shaved by force unless he got rid of that beard. This is a man who shot and killed over a dozen people, wounded dozens more on an army base, his fellow soldiers. And they're arguing with him about whether or not to shave his beard, and he's resisting them. Successfully, by the way. Okay. CNN reports that Hassan is a U.S.-born citizen of Palestinian descent, which would be interesting because there's no such thing as a Palestinian. It's a completely made-up nationality. There's never been a Palestine. They've never had a king. They've never had a president. They've never coined money. They've never levied taxes. There is no Palestine. At least, I think now there's a Palestinian Authority that does some of that stuff. But when Mr. Hassan was born, some 40-some-odd years ago, There was no Palestinian country. He's a Jordanian, an Egyptian, a Syrian, or Lebanese. There's no such thing as a Palestinian. At least there wasn't when Mr. Hassan was born. But how about that, folks? We have a man who, in broad daylight in front of God and everybody, shoots down and kills his fellow soldiers. And we can't put him on trial because he won't shave his beard. That's the state of justice in the military. That's the state of justice in America. And now to add insult to injury, ladies and gentlemen, from Philadelphia, CBS reports that Jerry Sandusky is reportedly writing a book in jail. Yeah, he's awaiting sentencing now, you'll remember, after being convicted back in June on 45 counts of abusing young boys. And now he's writing a book. When he should not be taking a breath, he's writing a book. Sandusky is being helped out with the book by his wife, Dottie. His wife is helping him with the book. Prison officials say that Sandusky is no longer on suicide watch and is called a model inmate. Yeah, he's a model inmate now. It's just embarrassing, the state of justice in this country. To add final insult to injury, CBS in Philadelphia reports that this would be Sandusky's second book. His first book was published in 2001, and what do you think the title of it was, my dear?
What If I Did It?
No, not What If I Did It. That was OJ's book. That might be what this book is going to be called, from Sandusky, If I Did It. No. His first book, ironically enough, was titled Touched, The Jerry Sandusky Story. That's just sad. Jerry Sandusky. Yeah, I think I already commented that he looks like anybody's grandpa, and he turns out to be a maniacal, deviant, pervert, abuser. How many are there?
Yeah.
Well, it's scary to think about how many there are out there, as a matter of fact. All right. So we've talked about the state of justice. Now let's go to the fruit of that tree. This is from Cincinnati.com. Six teenagers are under arrest after police say they viciously attacked a man. When police rounded most of the teenagers up and took them back to the police station and questioned them, the children ages 13 to 14 said they attacked the victim identified as Pat Mahaney because, quote, they were bored and they were looking for something to do, unquote. So they attacked and viciously beat a man. They also admitted that the man had done nothing to provoke being kicked and punched repeatedly in the face while he was helpless on the ground. The boys told police they only stopped assaulting Mahaney when one of the neighbors began yelling at them and said he was calling the police. An officer who happened to be in the area spotted a crowd of people, and several witnesses told the officer that Mahaney, who was covered in blood, here's what the witnesses told the police officer as he arrived on the scene. They said Mahaney, quote, was jumped by six children. Jumped by six children. I don't know. It's just shocking to read the story. Where was this? I guess this was somewhere in Cincinnati, Ohio, somewhere. 13 to 14-year-old, half a dozen children were bored. And so apparently, if you're a bored teenager in America, beating an innocent person within an inch of his life is an option as an activity to choose. Why is that? Why would young 13 to 14-year-olds even consider that as an option? I'll just let you chew on that. I have my ideas as to why, and I may return to them before the show is over. All right. So I've got the story from Washington, Family Research Council. Have you heard about this story? Maybe barely, just a little bit. David Mariner is the executive director for the LGBT community, the D.C. Center for the LGBT community. He says that one Floyd Corkins had been volunteering at the center for about 6 months and describes Floyd Corkins as, quote, kind, gentle, and unassuming, unquote. Yeah. He's a volunteer at the D.C. Center for the LGBT community. He was kind, gentle, and unassuming. Floyd Corkins last week made a negative reference about the work of the Family Research Council in their lobby before opening fire and shooting a security guard who fortunately did survive. This is from CBS News in Washington, D.C. They report that 25 gay rights groups released a statement through GLAAD condemning the shooting. Yeah, 25 gay rights groups released this statement. The motivation and circumstances behind today's tragedy are still unknown. But did you hear that? That's how they introduce it. Instead of saying we're shocked, disgusted, and want to be separated in every way from this horrible, horrific act, they open it up with, the motivation and circumstances behind today's tragedy are still unknown. But regardless of what emerges as the reason for this shooting, we utterly reject and condemn such violence. We wish for a swift and complete recovery for the victim of this terrible incident. Unquote. That was the voice of 25 gay rights groups, by the way. Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney said in a statement that he was appalled by the shooting. Really, Mitt, you were appalled? Why? Somebody's getting shot in a mass shooting like every week now. I mean, it's beyond being appalled. Really, Mitt, you were appalled? I suppose it's okay that Mitt was appalled. I suppose that's okay. I have to avoid my knee-jerk reaction to always attack Mitt Romney. All right, Mitt, it's okay that you were appalled, but I'm a little bit disappointed with the 25 gay rights groups who couldn't open their statement with condemnation. Instead, they want to mention the motivation and the circumstances and the reason, implying that there could be a good reason, at least in my mind. I guess. It's just, anyway, what else? Oh, yeah, they report that, well, I don't. Okay. Now, I want to get to this story. It's out of the personhood file, and I'm going to call this the hard case file. And I'll just give it to you straight. As it's been reported by CNN, which is not necessarily the most trusted name in news, but I'm going to take them at their word as far as this story goes. They report from the Dominican Republic, a pregnant leukemia patient who became a flashpoint in the abortion debate in the Dominican Republic died Friday morning. The 16-year-old who had been undergoing chemotherapy died from complications of the disease, according to Antonio Cabrera, the legal representative for the hospital where she died. The case stirred debate in her country, as her life was potentially at risk because of anti-abortion laws in the Dominican Republic. Doctors were allegedly hesitant to give her chemotherapy because such a treatment could terminate the pregnancy, which is a violation of the Dominican Constitution. Now, CNN didn't put allegedly in there, which is amazing because they throw that word around an awful lot. But in this case, They assume immediately that the reason doctors didn't want to give her chemo was because her baby could die, and because the Dominican Constitution bans abortion, they were afraid. That's what CNN assumes is the case. Now, we don't have all the facts, and that very well may be the case. I don't know. But according to the article, some 20 days after the woman was admitted to the hospital, she finally began receiving chemotherapy treatment. The teen's body did not respond to the chemotherapy, and her condition worsened. Her body also rejected a blood transfusion last Thursday, and the patient then suffered a miscarriage last Friday, followed by cardiac arrest. It's a sad story. It's a hard case, right? You've got a young pregnant mother with leukemia. Chemotherapy may save her life. Chemotherapy may at least extend her life, but there's a good chance that it will kill the baby. So how should something like this be handled? Were the doctors, was it the doctor's hesitancy and their fear of prosecution under the Dominican laws that caused this woman to die? Well, I would say we don't have enough facts to know that yet, but we do have enough facts to make a judgment about the case. Let me just conclude. At the time that chemotherapy treatment started, according to CNN, Rosa Hernandez, the girl's mother, said she had been trying to convince doctors and the Dominican government to make an exception so her daughter's life could be saved. She said, "My daughter's life is first." This is a quote, direct quote from the mother. "My daughter's life is first. I know that abortion is a sin, and I know that it goes against the law, but my daughter's health is first," said the mother about her daughter and her grandchild. So to me, ladies and gentlemen, this mother is an incredibly selfish person. Incredibly selfish. Her concern about one life should not eclipse her concern for another life. And she admits that she wanted, at least in this statement as I read it, she admitted that she wanted her daughter to have an abortion. She wanted the baby killed and removed so that chemotherapy could be administered. And I that's just the wrong state of mind, ladies and gentlemen. I hope I never have to face a situation like this. I hope my daughter never has to face a situation like this. But if we do, I hope that by the grace of God, we are given the strength to have concern for both lives and to go from there and to operate under that morality. I wish all of us that, you know why they call this a hard case? Because it's hard. It's hard to put someone else's life above your own or above a loved one. It's very hard. It's very difficult. But what is more honorable? To protect your own life at the expense of another, or to risk your life to save another? According to Article 37 of the Dominican Constitution, the right to life is inviolable from the moment of conception until death. Dominican courts have interpreted this as a strict mandate against abortion. And I would tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that the doctors at this Dominican hospital, we don't know why they hesitated to give this young lady chemotherapy. We don't have all the stories, and we don't have all the facts, and I know more will come to light as to what exactly happened here. But if the doctor's intention was to save the life of the mother, then they shouldn't have any problem giving chemotherapy, even knowing that the life of the child was threatened. Unless the mother said, "I don't want it." If the mother said she didn't want it, then the doctors had every right to hesitate because of her wishes. But the abortion issue at its heart is about our hearts and our intentions. And our intention must never be to kill an innocent person for any reason. And as long as the doctors here, as long as that was not their intent, then they could go forward with chemotherapy, even knowing that they put the life of the child at risk. Again, I say, unless the mother didn't want them to. All right. And we will definitely be following that story as more facts come out. Now, I want to return, again, in the personhood file, to this issue that Jason Saltzman brought up in his blog at bigmedia.org regarding Paul Ryan's professed support of personhood. Paul Ryan, on January 7th, 2011, was a signatory to H.R. 212, the Sanctity of Human Life Act. And I read it, and it's as if the people at Personhood USA wrote it. It's solid. It's good. It's something I could support. It says the right to life is guaranteed by the Constitution. It's paramount and fundamental. The life of each human being begins with fertilization, cloning, or its functional equivalent. Irrespective of sex, health, function, or disability, defect, stage of biological development, or condition of dependency, at which time every human being shall have all the legal, constitutional attributes and privileges of personhood. Signatory, Mr. Ryan of Wisconsin. So I'm worried about Paul Ryan. I'm worried that he's I'm seeing the co-opting of a pro-life conservative. Now, I've talked to some of my friends. They say, you know, a lot of these politicians, they'll sign anything that says it's pro-life. They don't necessarily even read it. They just want to be able to say they're pro-life, and maybe Mr. Ryan wasn't even aware of what he was signing. Now, I find that, well, impossible to believe that he wasn't aware of what he signed. But I do understand that he may have signed it strictly out of political strategery, and he may not be a diehard personhood supporter. But my concern is that we see on January 7, 2011, who Paul Ryan was, a pro-life conservative, a real pro-life conservative, who supports personhood. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is perhaps the greatest threat to the Romney machine, is real pro-life conservative Christians. We are probably the biggest stumbling block to Mitt Romney winning the White House. And a man who I hope was one of us, Paul Ryan, is now enjoined to the natural body of people created through the congruous ambitions of those in rebellion against God. On both sides of the aisle and at all levels of the religious, cultural, and political establishment. That's what Mitt Romney represents to me. There's not some grand conspiracy on the left. It's just that they all think the same. They are the natural body created by those in rebellion against God, and they're everywhere in the establishment. And my fear is that Mitt Romney, politically, figuratively, has killed Paul Ryan. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, here with my extremely attractive audio engineer, a little bit of Stevie Ray Vaughan for you there. Well, the news doesn't get much better from here. Let me go through this. All right, I don't want to give you people a downer, but I don't know what else to do. Let's another story here. This is from Politico. I wasn't sure if this was the culture file or the war file. Maybe it's the culture war file. I don't know. But according to Politico, Army suicides hit a new single record in July when 38 active duty and reserve soldiers took their own lives. Up from 24 in June. Okay, first of all, I don't like the massaging, the softening of the suicidal acts. They took their own lives. They killed themselves. And it needs to be stigmatized. Suicide is no longer stigmatized. It's an option now. And they've softened it with, oh, they took their own lives. No, they killed themselves. They committed suicide. Say it in a way that it has a negative connotation, please. Okay, so enough of my editorial. No, I guess you wouldn't call it editorial critique. I guess it's a grammatical critique, but I don't like it. Politico reports that suicide is on the rise despite efforts from high-profile military leaders, including Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, former Joint Chiefs Chairman Mike Mullen, and former Army Vice Chief General Peter Chiarelli. So we got all these generals who are very concerned about suicide, and suicide in the Army and in the culture generally is epidemic. Army officials said 187 active duty and reserve soldiers have committed suicide. Well, thank you for that, at least. They've committed suicide so far in 2012. Last year, there were 283 suicides among active duty and reserve soldiers. General Lloyd Austin, the Army's current vice chief, said the military is focused on trying to reduce the stigma associated with asking for help and address the mental health issues facing U.S. troops after more than a decade of war. Well, and I suppose I don't have a problem with the Army wanting to destigmatize the idea of a big, strong soldier admitting that he needs help dealing with the horrors of a decade-long war. I'm okay with that. But they also need to re-stigmatize suicide. I think there was an Army colonel who stood up and said that suicide was should not even be considered as an option, that it's a cowardly way out. And I don't know if he's still in the Army anymore. He may have been deported for saying that. But listen to what General Lloyd Austin says. Suicide is the toughest enemy I've faced in my 37 years in the Army, he says, and it's an enemy that's killing not just soldiers, but tens of thousands of Americans every year. That said, says the general, I believe suicide is preventable. To combat it effectively will require sophisticated solutions aimed at helping individuals to build resiliency, strengthen their life coping skills, and on and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, the abandonment of the living God and his word is why suicide is on the rise. Yes, a decades-long war is hard. Yes, life is difficult. But it is the abandonment of the word of the living God and the separation of men from their relationship with the living God that leads them to believe that suicide is an option. And you know what? It goes back to these six teenagers who were bored, and they just went and beat this gentleman within an inch of his life. He was treated for internal injuries. He had a tube down his nose to drain blood out of his stomach. Suddenly, a violent attack on an innocent man is somehow an option. And amongst our warriors, suicide is an option now. And it doesn't take a lot of sophisticated ideas to address these issues. It takes the word of the living God and a teacher to teach them about him. It takes a relationship with God to get through the most difficult events in life and to help teenagers when they're bored not turn to violence out of boredom. It's a relationship with the living God that is the fabric that holds society together and prevents violence and bloodshed, murder and suicide. So, not to put too fine a point on it, but for you atheists, and you advocates of homosexuality. It is your worldview that I believe is suicidal. And not only suicidal, but corrosively evil, in that not only do you want to kill yourselves, but you want to take as many people as you can with you. Not unlike Satan himself. So perhaps it's secular humanism that is the true satanic religion on the planet, or at least it's giving Islam a run for its money. Now, from RT.com, which I believe is a Russian news agency, the U.S. Army has awarded a scientist at the Indiana University School of Medicine $3 million to develop a nasal spray that eclipses suicidal thoughts. So what does the humanist say? Well, let's try a drug for suicide. Dr. Michael Kubek and his research team will have 3 years to ascertain whether the nasal spray is safe is a safe and effective method of preventing suicides. The naturally occurring neurochemical thyrotropin-releasing hormone, also known as TRH, could slow the rising suicide rate. The chemical has a euphoric, calming, and antidepressant effect. TRH has been shown to decrease suicidal ideas, depression, and bipolar disorders. The doctor says, quote, "This is far from a soldier's only solution. Potentially, if this works, we have an entirely new type of pharmacology." That's just what we need in the face of an epidemic of suicide, murder, mass shootings, beatings, violence, bloodshed. What's the humanist solution? An entirely new type of pharmacology. Well, I think it's no solution at all. In fact, I think we should return to the solution that has worked over the centuries. And that is the public expression at all times of a reliance on our relationship with the living God, who is our creator, our savior, and our judge. All nasal spray and hormones aside. The RT article closes, "Suicide is the fourth leading cause of death for adults between the age of 18 and 65. Every day, more than 100 Americans take their own life." A 100 people dying of something every day is definitely an epidemic. And I don't think you're going to find the solution in a euphoric nasal spray. All right. Now, from the Justice File. Now, this story is from last month when I was working on the personhood campaign and I didn't have a chance to get together with you. But it's from Longmont, Colorado. A pregnant woman was critically injured and lost her baby when a man with multiple DUI offenses driving an SUV hit her truck in Longmont. The pregnant woman was hit by one Gary Sheets. The woman was injured and lost her baby. The baby died. Sheets faces numerous charges, including two felony counts of vehicular assault, felony leaving the scene of an accident after causing injuries, driving under the influence, and driving under the influence with three or more prior arrests. This is a man who should not have even been alive. And he was out driving and he killed this. Oh, one of the charges that's missing, ladies and gentlemen, is vehicular homicide. Because in Colorado, an unborn child is not a person. And so we can't charge this man with vehicular homicide. But maybe on all these other charges, maybe we can give him 1,000 years in prison, maybe even 2,000 years. 7 News in Colorado found that Sheets had four previous DUI convictions. Okay, 4,000 years. Maybe we'll give it. All right. So why would I say, what are you saying, McBurney, that someone should be executed for a DUI? No, I'm not saying someone should be executed for a DUI. But after the second or third DUI, yes, he should have been executed. That's right. Yeah, you can't be in contempt of a righteous court. And that's what we're lacking here in America, is a righteous justice system, righteous judges, righteous lawyers. And I don't mean righteous in that they never make mistakes and that they're always right about everything. I'm saying righteous in the fact that they know that there is a God and that they will meet him someday and they will have to give an account, not only for what they did in court, but the Bible tells us that you'll give an account for every idle word. And if a judge and a lawyer knows that, they behave differently. If a drunk knows that, he behaves differently. He doesn't go out driving. It is the solution. God is the solution. The true and living God is the solution to these problems. Not to put too fine a point on it for you atheists and agnostics, but there you have it. All right, from the Justice File, David Berkowitz, the .44 caliber killer, is lamenting the recent spate of shootings that have claimed such innocents as a young boy in the Bronx, moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado, and worshipers at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin. I'm not going to read his quote. I'm not going to read it. Anyway, he basically says he's turned his life around and he's trying to teach people now that guns are not glamorous. Yeah, that's... Did I say he was called the .44 caliber killer? Yeah. Anyway, Mr. Berkowitz, you should not be alive. You should not be allowed to counsel young people about guns and violence. Because anything you do pales in comparison to the effect your swift and painful execution would have had. The swift and painful public execution of David Berkowitz would have gone further to preventing violence and bloodshed in America than 5 decades of counseling work that Mr. Berkowitz could do. Do I want to read any more of this? 10 years into his prison sentence, Berkowitz became a born-again Christian. Now, I stuck allegedly in there in my notes. Over the years, he's taken on various prison ministries. The only ministry he should have testified was being executed. That would have been a ministry in and of itself. Berkowitz says he's seen an endless parade of young men enter the prison gates where he lives, and it has sparked a passion in him to mentor youth. Ironic, isn't it, that the father of the modern mass murder epidemic fancies himself now a mentor for the youth. It's more than ironic. It's ironic wouldn't be the appropriate term. It's disgusting. It's an abomination. It's an affront to God and everything good and holy and right. And speaking of that, let's go to New York. CNN reports that Mark David Chapman, John Lennon's convicted killer, is up for parole for the 7th time and may be questioned in a parole hearing as early as Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. He was last up for parole in 2010, but was denied. Why was he denied? Well, would the parole board, would they say that he was a murderer who should have been publicly and painfully executed before Yoko even cashed the first life insurance check? That's what they should say, or at least words to that effect. That's not what they say. They didn't release him in 2010 because his discretionary release remains inappropriate at this time and incompatible with the welfare of the community. That's according to the New York State Division of Parole. Yeah. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. That's really all I've got. I appreciate your listenership, and I hope you will keep in mind as you go forward into this week that there is a God, that you are going to meet him, that he is your creator, he is your savior, at least he can be your savior. And barring that, he will be your judge. He will be your judge. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, and of course, as always, my other brother Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.